Several years ago, there was a brother in Christ who was a preacher. He's passed on now. And he was preaching a series of lessons in a meeting that had to do with various roles that we're all involved in. Husbands, wives, children, so forth. And he had a real deep, booming kind of voice. And he was preaching his lesson on wives. And he would end every lesson by saying, "Thank God I'm a husband or a man or whatever." But he ended this lesson with a deep, booming voice, "Thank God I'm a wife." And that may not be as funny today as it used to be. Perhaps we think that a topic like this is better covered in a ladies' Bible study with women doing the teaching. Yet there's great value in men and women together considering this topic of what it means to be a godly woman. And one of the reasons I believe we shall see is the way that the Bible itself addresses this issue. And many passages we could talk about that address the role of women and men, of course, Ephesians 5 and the husbands and wives there, or Colossians chapter 3, 18 and 19 addresses husbands and wives. And it shows a connection even to Christ and the church, that we need to see the fact that Christ and the church really are at issue when we talk about husbands and wives. There's something quite significant about that. We can approach the subject from the standpoint of character studies. Many women in the Bible that we could look at, godly women, demonstrating the kind of character that God would want. And we might think of Ruth, who's described as a woman of excellence in Ruth chapter 3 and verse 11. Or we see how kind she was, how devoted to the Lord, even though coming out of a Gentile nation of Moab. We might think of other women like Hannah or Sarah or Deborah. And in the New Testament, we might think of Eunice and Lois in 2 Timothy 1, Timothy's mother and grandmother who helped teach him the truth. Or Tabitha in Acts chapter 9, or Lydia in Acts the 16th chapter. There's a lot of role models, a lot of women that help us understand that. The Bible gives us many examples of that. And so actually, we're going to be doing a character study that will show us exactly what God finds to be in the ideal woman. And you might already be there, but we're turning to Proverbs chapter 31. One of the things I want you to think about here is the fact that, you know, there are large sections of Proverbs that are devoted to women. We sometimes think of Proverbs as a bunch of short statements that are not really connected, you know, but that's really not the case. Overall, we find big sections that really are tied together, showing the difference primarily between wisdom and folly. And the fundamental principle is that godly wisdom stands as being foundationally the fear of the Lord. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, Proverbs 9 and verse 10. And what you'll find are some contrasts. If we took the time and looked at Proverbs chapter 7, 8, and 9, you see the contrast there between the adulterous woman, the woman of folly, and the woman of wisdom. And so wisdom is personified as a woman. The adulterous woman is there, of course, in contrast to that. And it shows that the basic choice is going to be our choice. Are we going to choose wisdom or are we going to choose folly? We come to Proverbs 31 then. The subject of the wise, godly woman is not a new subject here. Instead, what we find in Proverbs 31 is that this woman is the embodiment of wisdom. She's the embodiment of the fear of the Lord. She really represents all that Proverbs has been talking about and helping us understand really what it means to fear the Lord and to be wise. So it's the culmination of what the rest of Proverbs has really been showing us. And this woman has imbibed God's wisdom in a practical way and shows it through her relationships that she has. Really, we're talking here about verses 10 through 31. A couple things I want to just note about that. First of all, is that this is a complete section that really forms an acrostic. You know what an acrostic is? You know, do you ever write, you know, maybe the word mother? That's a good word for today, right? You write the word mother, and M stands for this, and O stands for that, and T stands for this. And I never did learn the song. But That's an acrostic. Well, what you have in Proverbs 31, 10 through 31 is an acrostic. You'll find 22 verses, and each of those verses begins with the next letter of the Hebrew alphabet. There are 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet. And so it goes all the way. Essentially, it'd be like going from A to Z in our alphabet. And really serving as a learning device, acrostics were not uncommon back then. Psalm 119 is a great big giant acrostic with eight verses associated with each letter. So you get the idea. And you notice in verse 10 that how rare this is. In verse 10, it says, an excellent wife who can find, for her worth is far above jewels. Now that also implies that not every wife is necessarily a good thing. Now we might think about Proverbs 18 and verse 22, he who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. But also notice chapter 12 and verse 4, where it says, an excellent wife is the crown of her husband, but she who shames him is like rottenness in his bones. So right there would be an example of a folly, a woman of folly who brings shame there to her husband. A godly woman then is one who has chosen to fear the Lord. But one who does not choose to fear the Lord can become a serious problem and a serious detriment to a man who's trying to follow the Lord. And you think about what women did to Solomon's heart. Solomon started out well. He wanted to serve God. He wanted to please God. And in fact, we read that this is another lesson, really, but the idea that the Lord loved Solomon, and then we read that Solomon loved the Lord, and then we read that Solomon loved many women. And we know that that became his serious downfall. Or think of what Jezebel did to Ahab and the nation of Israel. The godly wife, the godly woman, is the crown of her husband and is more valuable here than words can even begin to express. But also important here, and I want us to see this, I made the point a moment ago that it's important for men to be involved in these studies as well, because you'll notice that Proverbs 31 is actually addressed to young men. You ever notice that? Look at chapter 31 and verse 1. The words of King Lemuel, the oracle which his mother taught him. So what he's talking about here is what his own mother had taught him. And he's really talking, you know, what, O my son, and what, O son of my womb, what, O son of my vows. Talking there to the young man who needs to understand what he's doing with his life, especially as a king in that context. And so this is advice to a young man that says, you need to be careful about the kind of women that you're involved with. And he gives that warning in verse 3. The mother gives the warning to him, do not give your strength to women or your ways to that which destroys kings. This is written to young men. And so while, yes, women want to study this and understand more about what it means to be this kind of a woman, what the real lesson here is to the young men to say, you need to be careful about the kind of woman that you would marry. And here's the kind of woman you want to marry. Here's the woman of wisdom. Here's the embodiment of the fear of the Lord. And that's what you want. So, of course, the lesson to the ladies would be, if you want a man who wants to fear the Lord, then this is the kind of woman you need to be. Proverbs contains an interesting principle here. And I heard this a few years back from someone else, but the principle is this. Marry the right women. And yeah, you heard me right. Plural. Marry the right women. And we're not talking about polygamy here. Because in Proverbs, you have really the first of all, figuratively, wisdom is described as a lady who is to be chosen. And so really the first woman that you need to choose, figuratively speaking, is wisdom. And that goes back into chapter 2, chapter 7, again chapter 7 through 9, where woman is the embodiment of wisdom, that you first marry yourself to that, to her, to wisdom itself. And then, of course, literally, marry the right woman, one who will exemplify the wisdom that is taught here in Proverbs. As the adulterous woman is the flesh and blood version of the way of folly, so the worthy, virtuous woman of chapter 31 is the embodiment of wisdom, the living example of the wise virtues taught throughout the book of Proverbs. She's already chosen wisdom for herself, so now the man is to choose her if he's going to be wise. So what is it that makes the woman so valuable here in Proverbs 31? And the answer really is character. Her character. And I'm just going to note a few items here that we find throughout these verses. And we're going to start by just saying she's a trustworthy person. Her character, again, is founded on the fear of the Lord. You notice the very end in verse 30, charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. So give her the product of her hands and let her works praise her in the gates. She's trustworthy with financial matters. Verse 16 says she considers a field and buys it. From her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She's frugal. In other words, she's prudent. She's not wasting money. She seeks some kind of economy, increases family resources by good economic practice. She can be trusted to make good preparations. Verse 21, she's not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. As she helps protect her family's comfort and health. She's trusted with her fidelity, with money, with her reputation, with the man's reputation even. And with... Now see, this again would be to the man. You're looking at a woman who can be trusted with your reputation and a woman who can be trusted with your children. Now you might say, well, wait a minute, there's my reputation and my children too. Yes, that's true. But if you understand, again, the point that's being made here, as this is being addressed to young men, he's on the lookout for someone that he knows he can trust. Now, it's going to work the other way too. Because as a woman, you're going to want, a woman of wisdom, you're going to want the kind of man that's going to be looking for you. That would be the point. Honor. She honors her husband, verse 11. The heart of her husband trusts in her. Again, she's trustworthy. He will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. In other words, you've got a woman here who is continually seeking his good. She rewards herself, essentially, by doing what's best for him. Now again, I realize this may be a little bit politically incorrect today. I want you to keep in mind the backdrop here in the New Testament that tells husbands to love their wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for it. Okay? Because we're not talking about a tyrannical kind of relationship here. We're talking about the kind of relationship that embodies wisdom through and through. The kind of wisdom and the kind of love that God demonstrates for his people. So here's a woman. She's loyal to him and she respects his decisions even if she disagrees with him. You know, we might just bear in mind that New Testament does say women are to submit themselves to their husbands. It never says the husband makes her submit. Never says that. But that she voluntarily does this. But submission is not only when you agree. Sometimes it's when you disagree. But yet, he's making the call at that point. Her husband is known in the gates, verse 23 says, when he sits among the elders of the land. By tending properly to what's going on at home, she makes it so that he can attend to his business. And that lets him then develop a good reputation with his peers. And I want you to notice here the contrast with today's competitive atmosphere, where sometimes the woman tries to compete with the man. And that's really not what we find right here. The ungodly wife, remember in 12 and verse 4, is a shame to her husband. She humiliates him. She is a rottenness to his bones, the text tells us. But in Proverbs 31, this woman, as a result of doing good for her husband, earns a good name not only for him, but for herself, especially with her husband and children. Verses 28 and 29, her children rise up and bless her. Let me ask you something, mothers. Is there anything really more that you want than your children rising up and blessing you? I mean, on a day like this especially, is there anything more that you would want than your child blessing you, praising you? For you, for what you've done in their lives. Her husband also. And he praises her, saying, many daughters have done nobly, but you excel them all. Listen, it ought to be the attitude of every husband that I got the best wife. Now, I'll just, you know, whatever y'all want to say about that, I got the best wife, okay? Why? Because what we're saying is that this is the way a man ought to be able to feel and understand about his wife. She earns a good name for herself. He has a good reputation because of that. And the children and he rise up and they bless her, they praise her because of what she has done. And her works praise her in the gates too, verse 31 says. She's a worker. You can't read this text without seeing somebody who puts in a great deal of work. Now you might think, well, if you're a mother, of course you're going to be working. Well, yes. But you notice there's more to that right here. She does not eat the bread of idleness, verse 27. She looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Then, back in verse 13, she looks for wool and flax and works with her hands in delight. She's like merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. She rises while it is still night and gives food to her household and portions to her maidens. She considers a field and buys it. From her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She girds herself with strength and makes her arms strong. She senses that her gain is good. Her lamp does not go out at night. She stretches out her hands to the distaff and her hands grasp the spindle. She extends her hand to the poor and so forth. She's a tireless worker. In fact, you might read that and say, well, I don't know how she does that, all that. Well, it takes hard work. And it's interesting to me because even though this woman is described as having maid servants, she still works with her own hands. And again, contributes to the economy of the family rather than being a drain on the economy of the family. Now, something a young man needs to ask himself before marrying would be this. Is the young woman that you're interested in someone who works hard in whatever she does? Is she a hard worker? We tell our young ladies to look for a man who works hard, don't we? You got to make sure you're looking for a man who can support you, a man who can do all this. But at the same time, the man needs to understand that he doesn't want to marry someone who's lazy either. It works both ways. She's selfless. Notice again verse 18. She senses that her gain is good. Her lamp does not go out at night. Describing a woman here who essentially rises before the sun comes up to work on behalf of others and make preparations for her family and servants. Well, that's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because again, we might, in their current culture, we might be given to laziness if we allow ourselves to do so. Don't get up, watch soap operas, or whatever we do, you know. And are we really being selfless in how we approach others. This woman is also one who prioritizes. Her life is centered on her household. I don't know why that's offensive to people. Do you? To say that a woman's life is centered on her household. Today is again, very politically incorrect. Some, you know, and then kind of on the other hand, is that some would cite Proverbs 31 as though this woman were the modern career woman. Well, she is a career woman in Proverbs 31. In fact, I think it's interesting if you just look at this. What is her career in Proverbs 31? Well, let's see. You got real estate. You got agriculture. You got textiles and weaving. You got food service. You got clothing, labor management, merchandising. She's a purchasing agent. Education. How about all the above? Let me just put this in context here. She's a homemaker. And I'm stressing the maker part here right now. Ladies, do not ever underestimate the task of homemaking. If you have been misled to think that homemaking is just a boring thing where you're just kind of sitting around and all, please study this and see what's really going on in this text. Yes, this is a career woman. But her ultimate career is her home. Now, yes, she is working some outside. She's doing things. She helps, again, she helps the economy of the family as she does all of this. But still, all of it is done with the idea in mind that she is helping the home. She's a businesswoman, but her business is for the home mainly. Again, this is not a proof text of a woman who competes with her husband and leaves the children behind. This is a woman who does things, does all this work, does everything that she does for the purpose of the home. Again, none of this is to say you can't ever make money outside the home, because she does that. But when your career becomes more important than your family, you've jumped the ship. To what purpose and to what end is she doing what she does? The woman of Proverbs 31 has all the good qualities of a good manager. She has planning. She has initiative. She's perceptive. She knows the value of things. But before all else, she sees the value in fearing the Lord first. She sees the value in raising her children and being a help suitable to her husband. The wise woman builds her house, but the foolish tears it down with her own hands. Proverbs 14 and verse 1. I want to stress something else here about being a homemaker. And that is that the idea of creating something beautiful, making something that is beautiful. Now, I'm not talking about arts and crafts so much. There is a warning here at the end about grace and charm and so forth. In verse 30, charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. But that doesn't mean that beauty is unimportant. It's not saying beauty is totally insignificant to anything else. That's not the point. In fact, just read Song of Solomon. You can see kind of the difference there. Beauty is not unimportant, but it can be deceitful. Its power for deceit, in fact, is kind of in proportion to how important it really can be. But what is the really important beauty here? We inherently recognize that men and women are attracted to each other physically, and that's part of the husband-wife relationship. We know that. She wants to take care of herself and so forth. But Proverbs cautions that the beautiful woman who lacks discretion can really be a problem. Proverbs 11 and verse 22 says, as a ring of gold in a swine's snout, so is a beautiful woman who lacks discretion. Here she shows wisdom by her discretion, how she acts and talks around others. But the really important thing I want you to see here is that she has the ability to create beauty. You know, we all can think about a woman's touch around the home when it comes, you know, you go into the apartment or home of a bachelor and you know, it's usually just kind of dry and boring and there's, you know, and somebody comes in and says, you know, you really need a woman's touch around here. There's a reason we say that. Because we recognize that there's an ability there to create an atmosphere, to create a beauty that sometimes us guys just don't get very well. And that's okay. In Proverbs 31, her household is clothed with scarlet, verse 21 says. Her clothing is fine linen and purple, verse 22. In other words, she does see to it that she and her family and her house looks decent. But at the same time, verse 25 says, strength and dignity are her clothing. Strength and dignity. Dignity is something that this woman is going to show. The question here is not so much, and again, this is not something that is new to me because I learned this a few years ago from someone else. But the question is not, is she beautiful? As much as, does she create beauty? A godly wife will add touches of beauty to everything that she does. In the demeanor, in the way she approaches things, and in her life itself. And this woman is generous. Verse 20 says, she extends her hand to the poor and stretches out her hands to the needy. And remember that she embodies the wisdom of all the preceding chapters. What's interesting to me is if you read through the book of Proverbs, you'll find that there are at least 22 verses in Proverbs. That's equivalent to an entire chapter. 22 verses emphasizing generosity. Now, men, do you think that having a generous wife helps you to be more generous? A gracious woman attains honor, chapter 11 and verse 16 says. The point is that she's a woman who sees, here's a need, I want to help, we'll take care of it. And not just somebody who sits back and waits around for others to do everything. And of course, to sum it up here, she's simply wise. Verses 25 and 26, again, strength and dignity are her clothing. She smiles at the future. She opens her mouth in wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. Do you get the feeling that this is a woman who is angry and bitter? She opens her mouth in wisdom. She smiles at the future. She has some sense of a positive view about what's coming. It's not just this negative, everything is bad, kind of a hapless approach to life. She brings joy to people. She's positive, she's cheerful. You contrast that, you know, with chapter 21 and verse 9. It's better to live in a corner of a roof than in a house shared with a contentious woman. Or, chapter 27 and verse 15, a constant dripping on a day of steady rain and a contentious woman are alike. The ungodly woman is spoken of in Proverbs in very unbecoming kind of terms. That's not what you want. It's not what anybody wants. A marriage relationship is one that requires two people who come together and recognize that they are reflecting the image of God together. As, again, Paul said in Ephesians 5, what I'm really talking about is Christ and the church. So they reflect this together, and that means that you're looking at two people here whose primary concern is really to help each other make it to the end to go to heaven together. Well, I sometimes illustrate this. I had a friend I grew up with that when her husband asked her to marry him, her answer was, "Only if you'll help me go to heaven." And that put it right back on him, of course, that he is promising to do just that, to be the kind of man he needs to be, and she'll be the kind of woman she needs to be, and together they create a circumstance that should reflect what Christ and the church represent. That's the ideal, that's the goal, that's what we want. But how to be a godly woman is summed up in verse 30. Charm is deceitful, beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. A woman who fears the Lord. Now, we might look at this and say, but what about the man? Yeah? Again, think about the point that's being made here, that the mother of this king is saying to her son, "Son, you better watch what kind of woman you get around." Why? Why would you want a woman who fears the Lord? Because you need to fear the Lord. And need we talk about what happened when Adam followed what Eve did? Guys need help. Again, she's the embodiment of wisdom. She is both the means of wisdom and the end to be attained in wisdom. That is, really being pleasing to God. She's the conclusion of the whole of Proverbs, the embodiment of what it means to fear God and keep His commandments. But you see, that also teaches me that I don't want to look at this and simply say, "Oh, that only applies to what a woman should be." Because if I want to share in the wisdom of God, and this is showing me, here's the embodiment of wisdom, then I as a man need to look at this and say, that's what I need to be too. That is to say, I want to be wise, and I need to be generous, and I need to be someone who smiles at the future and tries to make a home that is good for the whole family. That I need to be selfless. I need to prioritize and make sure that my life is centered on my family first. I need to be an honorable person, a godly person, a trustworthy person. There aren't any of those characteristics that we just went through that could not equally in some way apply to the man. Why? Because this is summing up what all of Proverbs has been about. So all of this time that you're studying the book of Proverbs and you're saying, "Hey, I need to be like this and we need to be more like that," you come to the very end and here's a woman who embodies all of it. And God is saying to us, "That's what I'm talking about. That's what I want." So are we doing it? Again, all this may sound a little politically incorrect, but so be it. Because I'm far more interested in the wisdom of God than I am in the wisdom of this world that does not accept or believe in God. So, young men, this passage is for you. Ladies, the ideal has been set for you. There's a standard there. Married men, give your wife the praise and respect that is due her. Because she'll not praise herself if she's a godly woman, but her husband surely will praise her, but let her works praise her in the gates. And let's all strive to embody the wisdom that Proverbs demonstrates for us. Let's get ready to sing the song that was chosen for us. There is no more important relationship that you'll ever have than the one you have with your Lord. And if you make that what it ought to be, then your other relationships will fall into place. The greatest marriage that you'll ever have is when both the husband and wife are seeking the wisdom of God together. So let's commit ourselves to do just that. And if tonight you need to respond to the gospel, perhaps you need to be baptized into Christ, or you need our prayers, whatever it may be, please let us know. Come forward now while we stand and sing.
One plea, but that the